Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Casper. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/GOT and use the GOT promo code during checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we are ready for season six. I know I am.
Revving it up.
I don't know if you are.
I am.
You have a lot of work to do with spoiler casts. And,
but I don't have Mad Men this year.
That's right.
So, like, I can fully, I mean, I don't, I'm
you
not sure.
You replaced it with Banshee and Penny Dreadful.
I got Banshee and Penny Dreadful that I'm doing with my co-host Cecily. Jim's not involved in those productions, but nothing on the scale of Mad Men so far, and
right.
I'm feeling good. Plus, you know, as I'm sure people are still shocked to find out that George Martin did not get his long-awaited Winds of Winter out.
Yeah.
So, if you're a big fan of the spoiler section, just real briefly, what we will not be talking about in this podcast is any kind of spoilers at all. That's casting news, that's theories for the future, that's anything with any kind of book knowledge at all.
Mm-hmm.
We are kicking that to Friday, as we did last year. We're going to have a spoiler-friendly preview. So if you're not read the books, this is a safe space for you. We have a completely separate show that we have for spoilers only.
Yep.
And we got a lot to talk about there. But
it's an exciting season.
It is an exciting season.
Because it's so fucking weird.
I think if you're a book first fan, it must be a kind of a crushing, disappointing experience. Because I'm not really familiar with this ever have happened before. Where the adaptations of the book flip places and you're essentially now writing an adaptive novel based on the series that was based on the original novel. Like it's
like if, I don't know, episodes 4, 5, and 6 of Star Wars had been books.
Yes.
And then episodes 1, 2, and 3 had been movies, and they wrote the novelizations of the movie.
Yeah,
it's real weird.
It's really hard
exciting.
To make an analogy. And it seems like it's bummed out George Martin, as you'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's bummed out the fan base. But
I think it's bummed out a certain part of the fan base, because it hasn't bummed me out. I've never read a single word of the book.
And the good news
so
is, by far, the massive majority of people are show first fans. So it's not going to really impinge. And to the extent that Gurm's writing is, you know, to the extent that the magic is from George Martin himself,
that's the scary thing.
And that it just working on an outline without all of the details finally put in place, you know, people have been skeptical sometimes when the double D's, which is our pet name for the showrunners, when they kind of color outside the lines, well, now they'll be writing the lines.
Yeah, they're taking it all over, and it's, you know, they're still going to have guidance from Martin. He's going to let them know what he plans on doing in the books. But this is, you know, it's exciting. It's a little scary. I don't think they're going to fuck it up. But I also can't see the book first people liking whatever they put on screen.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how good it is.
Sure.
It doesn't matter, you know, how exciting it is. They're probably going to feel disappointed, because they've invested years and years and years of their lives into these books, and those are the things that they really view as the primary canon here. You know?
Yeah, and I think there'll be a few percentage points of really hardcore book fans that just skip this season entirely.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, you know what? I'm going to sit this on the shelf. I'm going to cancel my HBO for subscription. I'm going to wait another 5, 10 years, however long it takes for the movies to come out, and then I'm going to get my box set out like a fine wine. What I'm really curious about is, let's say that the next two, and it sounds like, have you heard the rumors that just came out the last week or two that the Double D's have decided, it might not even be a rumor, it might just be a fact, that they're going to take the final, what was going to be the final 8 season, and they couldn't fit it into 10 episodes, and 10 episodes has been...
Eight? season 8 or season 7?
Season 7.
Okay.
So this is season 6. Season 7, they think they got 13 episodes of content left after this season. Okay. And they've also famously said, we can only do 10 episodes. It's not a laziness thing. It's literally
money and
getting
time.
Everyone across three continents.
Right.
And all this shit and all the post-production. Like, we literally do post-production up until the thing's released. We have a mini vacation and we get right back to shooting.
Yeah.
So it's like there's just literally not enough time for more than 10 episodes or 10 hours of content.
Shoot it all on a soundstage. It'll be fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Just do puppets. South Park animation. They can get shit turned around in a week. Come on, guys.
Yep.
But they've said that they've got 13 episodes, which means they think they're going to do an AMC-like 8 and 7 split. Because, again, they can't literally get it all done.
That's 15 episodes. What?
Wait, I'm
six
sorry.
6 and 7?
Maybe 6 and 7. Okay. I'm not so good on the math.
All right.
Also, I'm going to warn you, I am not in mid-season shape as far as pronunciations or spellings or any of that stuff. So, like, it always is a little rough the first week or two before I get my hand around, my tongue back around the dialogue and the characters.
Yeah, I've been away from this for a year.
So, the other thing I want to talk about this impact is, since we're leapfrogging the books this season, I'm bringing Jim to the spoiler section.
Right.
So, he has not been privy to anything as yet, but in the 3 days between this podcast and us recording Friday, I'm going to take him onto YouTube and take him onto Alt-Shift-X and show him a couple mind-blowing videos and, like, fully reveal some of the major tinfoil theories that have not been addressed on the show. And then we'll talk about that Friday. But the upshot is, you know, the hallmark of the spoiler section has always been the tinfoil theory of the week. I got one, maybe two, maybe three. I've got my eyes on this third one that's super interesting, but it's still developing. But I was really counting on a book coming out. So I think what this is going to shift into, the tinfoil spoiler section is going to shift into, what does the show tell us to confirm or deny long? We're going to revisit some of these tinfoil theories and say whether things prove or disprove them. So, which is still exciting. It's just not going to be like, hey, look at this crazy theory that might blow your mind. It's going to be more like, hey, that crazy theory can't be true. Or half of it's true, and now the other missing piece is this and what is it. So there's still going to be lots to talk about. It's just not going to be.
And this might actually be a good time for people who were adverse to spoilers before to jump in on that part of the podcast with us, because we don't really have spoilers beyond this. We have a couple characters.
There is a particular sequence or a complete sequence from the book that I thought they were just going to omit.
Yeah,
involving the Greyjoys, that is going to be largely stuff right out of the last book or two.
But other than that, I mean, there are no spoilers to get. So
yes,
come along with the ride for the ride with us, and you know, check out like what everyone has been talking about as far as spoilers go, and you know, the theorizing that everyone's done.
And if you want to check out the old tinfoil theories, I actually have an archive that I link in every show notes that shows which episode we talked about which theory. And you can actually hot link to those and listen to them on your phone or whatever. So that's a long talk about spoilers and how we're going to handle them. But that's the big news of the season, that this is a book adaptation that is no longer. It's original screenplay starting next week.
Right. You can't not talk about it.
Yeah. So we talked about that. I'm sure people have feedback for us, how they kind of feel, how they're going to go forward with it.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I background watched the last season.
Okay.
In preparation for this.
I watched the last three episodes. And, because I felt like that's what I needed to get kind of plugged back in.
That gives you kind of the end, like where all the characters end up.
Yeah.
I think. All the major players.
I've been spending a lot of time in the Game of Thrones and the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit.
Okay.
And, you know,
so you're ready to go.
Yeah, there are people in the forums at forums.baldmove.com that are raring to talk about that. That's the other thing about spoilers is I'm still going to have two show threads. A spoiler and non-spoiler. So I know that even though we're going beyond the books, you're still going to have a lot of stuff a lot of book knowledge is going to be coloring your expectations for the future. So please be kind to everybody and keep the spoiler stuff in the spoiler thread. When in doubt, post it in the spoiler thread.
Okay.
So what do you want to talk about? Do you want to just kind of talk about...
Do you want to bring everybody up to speed on where these characters landed at the end of the...
Yeah, sure. I've got a couple outlines, the ones that I found interesting in the last couple of episodes. One of the ones that I'm really interested in is Sam announcing the fact that he's heading down to the Citadel to forge his maester's chains at Old Town.
He's got a lot of reading to do.
He's got a lot of reading. And, you know, the one thing that we've bemoaned these characters not having is a lack of they have a lack of working knowledge about dragons and White Walkers.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know that the maesters have been poo-pooing the magical aspects in favor of science and reason, which, you know...
Okay, I'm all for that.
I can't fault their focus.
Right, but I mean...
But when the dragons start flying, exactly. It's time to dust off the heebie-jeebie-bounding human flesh volumes and...
Spiky Iceman attack? Let's bust out let's dust off the old volumes and... Look at some lore.
Yeah, let's talk about the so-called dragon glass. Yeah, but I'm excited about
that. So-called Valyrian steel too.
Yes,
let's talk about it all because holy shit,
that thing seems like it's the business for taking out White Walkers. Can new dragon steel be forged?
I don't know.
Has that process been lost? Those are all great, interesting questions. And you know what? I feel like that the Sam plot could have this basis of this really interesting kind of unraveling a mystery with a very hard time limit thing to it. And I kind of like that stuff. I like smart dudes reading
it feels
books
like,
and figuring shit out.
Like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? Where they've got this time limit, like the doom is coming and they have to read through this big tome.
The master's going to return to the Hellmouth
before
prom.
Yeah, and they have to figure out how to not ruin the dance. I'm excited to see Sam doing what he likes to do.
The dance with dragons, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's one plot line.
Okay.
Danny's adventures with the Dothraki.
She's kidnapped at the moment.
She and my prediction for season 6 is it's going to be an inverse of season 2, where it's just going to be Drogon wandering the Dothraki Sea saying, "Where's my mommy?"
Okay.
Over and over and over again. He's going to have a romantic dalliance with Zaro Zon Duck Sauce or whatever the hell his name is.
Uh-huh. Then Duck Sauce gets grayscale.
I mean, we've all seen the trailers. Drogon features prominently. He's always, you know, soaring over the hills and menacing. That's the end game, right? Like, they can take her into whatever slavery they want, but... I feel like Drogon's got enough residual loyalty to her that he's not going to put up with her being sold into slavery or retired because that's one of the
she helped him escape when he was getting speared to death.
Sure,
she rode him off into the sunset. The CG
rubber
sunset.
Drogon, sure.
Yep.
But I feel like that's going to be interesting. There's going to be some keys between Tyrion and her. Tyrion's going to use more of his book knowledge. She's going to use more of her mother's intuition to kind of tame these dragons. And that's the end game we're looking for on this plot line.
It seems to me that Tyrion is going to help her a lot. I mean, the one thing we've been complaining about Dany is she's very confused.
And inexperienced.
For the most part. Inexperienced and doesn't know how to handle these situations.
A fart in the wind, yes.
Right, so having someone like Tyrion who... is kind of experienced in everything.
Yes.
To guide her is, I think, going to be a huge boon for her.
Plus, like, I mean, that scene with him and Varys where they're like, oh, it's just it's a damn shame we don't have anybody who knows how to efficiently run a corrupt city.
Right. we do.
That's great. I am so happy to see that show for a second showing.
Right.
Anything else? I mean, there's also the interest. I'm kind of curious.
They're chasing her down.
What about the romance plot here?
With who? With Jorah or with Dario?
Both.
Okay.
Because this is essentially they're going off into the woods to track her down. There's going to be the not idly do the Leaves of Lothlorien Fall moment where they find her brooch or whatever she dropped out there.
Of course.
Somehow. And I don't know. I mean, what's your read on the situation here? Like, how does she feel about the two men?
Oh, man. It's tough to say. Like, at the end of that, I mean, she clearly comes around on Jorah after he kills a few guys in the arena.
But comes around as a protector and an advisor, or comes around as a romantic interest?
Maybe not romantic. I don't know. She's in it pretty heavy with Dario at the moment. And I think... you know, it's a little more age appropriate. Sure. A little more. He seems to fit her better, I guess.
The other thing is Jorah's got grayscale.
Right.
So
I don't think he would want to be too near her.
And I wonder if the fact that, because if he didn't have grayscale, I don't know that him being kind of her protector and advisor would be enough. But since he knows he's going to die and can't get that close to her anyway, mm-hmm. I wonder if that's how they're going to kind of smooth that romantic triangle over. Because I don't think there's much of a triangle there. I really don't see much attraction from Danny.
Dario finds out about the grayscale, yeah. On this road trip, he's got to.
I think it does damage to the character if he doesn't.
Okay.
Because they've shown him to be very street smart and perceptive and more so than the average bear. So I feel like if he doesn't find out before what Jorah the bear? Before Jorah has to reveal it for some bullshit reason, it'll do a little bit of damage to the character for me.
Okay.
We already talked about Tyrion and Varys ruling Meereen.
Mm-hmm.
One burning question I've got in my mind is what becomes of Brienne's plotline? Because
that's a real good question. It's kind of at its end at the moment, right?
In both the books and the TV series, it's very much up in the air, but in the geography and the circumstances could not be more different.
Really?
So I'm wondering, you know... In both the books and the show, it seems like the natural thing is to put her and Jaime back together.
Okay, I would like that.
They got very close. They got geographically separated. They've had very different experiences, and they've changed a lot as people. Now bring them back together and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also wrapped up in what the hell is Sansa doing, right? Like, Theon and Sansa jump off the wall at the end of last season. We presume they're alive. We talked a lot about the snowbanks.
Yeah.
The high wall snowbanks of Winterfell.
The Russians on YouTube have helpfully myth-busted this. You can, in fact, jump off a six, seven-story building into a sizable snowbank and be just fine.
As long as you're Russian.
You have to have 50% of vodka by volume in your body, but, you know...
Yeah, so
I'm sure Reek could get stinking drunk.
So they're kind of, you know, orbiting around each other there in that location. Maybe they connect again. I don't know. The show has a way of like not connecting people who are sitting right next to each other.
Well, the thing is, if you bring Brienne and Sansa together, what's Sansa's reaction?
She's already said, "I don't need your help, and I don't want it."
Well,
now,
also,
has
she
that changed?
She did light the candle, and Brienne did not come.
That's true. Yeah.
So
she didn't really have time to come, though, right? Like, they had to run away and jump off the wall quickly.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know. The war started. I guess maybe she had time.
I mean, I guess the expectation.
She just never saw
it. And we talked about how ridiculous that plot is. Like, really, you're going to light a candle and you're going to see it. And then what? You're just going to launch into your.
Knock on the gates.
Yeah. Sir, there's a candle lit in the third story window. By rights, the girl is mine. There was always a little bit of step one, candle, step two, question, step three, rescue.
So now they're all outside the wall.
But I think Sansa might have reason to be distrustful of Brienne.
Yeah.
That's one more person that's promised to protect me, and you sold me out.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of last season was Sansa coming into her own, right? And like... taking matters into her own hands. Like, I know Littlefinger was kind of pushing her around, but he was teaching her, and also I get the feeling that Sansa was starting to play another game for her own game that was not Littlefinger's.
Yeah.
So I think even if her and Brienne meet up, she might not be, you know, wanting a hand to hold.
Yeah.
She might want to take things into her own hands.
Yeah. No, I'm interested in her meeting Brienne. I'm interested in her meeting Littlefinger.
Like, can't stick around Winterfell. I don't...
No, but I think... it'd be foolish that she... I don't know if it's this season or two seasons from now.
Yeah, she needs to...
At some point, Littlefinger's going to be in front of her, and words will be exchanged. Now, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, maybe she'll be like, "You're right. You put me in a situation. I was strong enough to overcome it. I went through some shit."
But that's understating it.
I mean, I don't know what her reaction would be. I could see it being all over the map.
So let's talk about Littlefinger.
Well, before we do that, I want to talk about Theon.
Oh, yeah.
And how, again, like, I almost on the spoiler cast last year swore that I'd eat this horrifying scorpion.
Oh, good. I'm glad
that
you
we have in the. It's perfectly edible, but mm-hmm. that's like saying, I don't know, the sea urchin is perfectly edible.
Well, I've eaten sea urchin.
I'm talking about spines and all. Like, it's just a horrifying thought. No. To, or like eating a thistle. Eating you might be able to eat a thistle, but I don't want it. And I backed off because I'm like, okay, wait a second. There's still a 1% chance that they'll bring this large Greyjoy intrigue in the books. They're going to adapt it in some way, dish it out to us as show watchers. And you can see some dudes in heavy plate squid-based armor in some of the trailers, which is kind of all the evidence we need that says that there's going to be more to the Greyjoys.
Right, their sigil is the squid.
Yeah, and I honestly have no idea. Especially without being in a spoiler section, what I could say about, you know, what is Theon's arc? He has no penis.
Right.
He has the claim to the Greyjoy throne.
He's got no penis and he's got no balls. I mean, I don't know that, physically, but
yeah, that's the thing. Like he's first in line to the throne behind his father, but he has no way to get progeny.
Sure.
Unless he's fathered some bastards out there and he wants to legitimize, which is, let's face it, entirely possible.
Yeah. I mean, I'm less concerned about, like, where he ends up politically and more where he ends up mentally.
Yeah.
Because he's been seriously fucked up. And I felt like there was a moment where Sansa broke through to him when they were talking about her brothers.
Yeah, and then she chucked Miranda off the roof. It definitely...
Right.
He's definitely snapped the total Bolton control.
Right, and I wouldn't say he's back.
No.
Theon's not back.
It would be very
stretch,
unrealistic,
but
if that's just a binary thing. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, Darth Vader throws power. You can do that in Star Wars. I don't think you can do that in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but Sansa is kind of paving a road for him to get out of the Reek mentality. And now that he's free, I don't know. I mean, how scared is he going to be of Ramsay once he's outside these walls?
Sure. And what is
he might still be scared. He probably should.
And I don't think Sansa's going to be like, oh, thank you for saving me, because he's let a lot of opportunities to be the hero kind of slip by. And, you know.
So conspicuously when Ramsay comes to that room. And
and also, really conspicuously, he backed his own family over the Starks and arguably led to the whole Stark downfall.
Right.
Like, that completely changed the course of the war. The Greyjoys deciding, instead of joining him, to start invading him and splitting his forces up. So,
yeah, we'll see where he goes. Right now, he's falling potentially to his death off the side of Winterfell.
Potentially. I also want to talk about Jaime. How does Jaime salvage the Dornish situation?
Well, I feel like maybe we should talk about Littlefinger. Stay within this world, because there's a lot of stuff still wrapped up with Sansa, right?
Okay, I definitely want to make sure we don't leave Jaime, because all we talked about is we want to see him with Brienne.
I think I want to use some stepping stones, like Littlefinger to Cersei to Jaime, maybe.
All right.
And then, you know, what's his name? The singing sellsword. Fucking, I can't remember his name now.
Bronn.
Too many Bronn. Yeah. So Littlefinger has been promised to be made Warden of the North if he goes up and he kills the Bolton armies and what's his fucking name? Who got his head chopped by Brienne? Yeah. And Stannis army. Mm-hmm. If he takes Winterfell and he destroys the armies up there, Cersei's gonna make him Warden of the North. Now, I don't know if she's lying to him. I don't know if he would even know that. He might. He probably would.
Well, whether she's lying to him or not, Cersei's ability to keep her word is very much in doubt with me.
Sure. Yeah.
Is she even in control
anymore?
It's
on a whim. Yeah. Yeah. And it seems to be like, oh, well, circumstances have changed. I've changed my mind.
Yeah.
She can do that at any moment.
Well, and
but Littlefinger
the High
should.
Septon could put her in his position, or
right.
Her own people in court who are not super impressed, and she's just come off this humiliation. The only thing she's got is Robert the Strong.
The Mountain?
Which ain't nothing. Yes,
yeah.
The Zombie Mountain.
Okay. Never heard him named Robert the Strong.
I don't know. I think they said that in the last episode, but that's his name in the book.
Okay.
They do a little bit more of an effort of making it like some, but I feel like if you make it to the end of Dance of Dragons and you don't realize Robert the Strong is the resurrected corpse of Gregor, Clegane, okay. you need a fourth step reveal.
Oh, so they call the guy in armor who we may or may not know is the Mountain?
The new Kingsguard guy who's taken a vow of silence until he can defeat all our enemies. He's Robert the Strong.
Okay, so he's like considered like a separate character almost until it's revealed.
Which obviously, but it's already been revealed. You can't trot out this Frankenstein character in court. He's got to be, and he's the Strong, so he's like this mystery knight, which is another, I know, which is another thing that kind of runs throughout the books. This theme.
I feel like it might work better on the page.
Yeah,
because you don't have the visual cues.
Every single time where Martin has played like a kind of a shadowy character who's another character, he in the show they just dispense with that entirely because he can't do it.
Right,
you can't put. Right. I mean, this isn't Superman. You can't put glasses on a guy and be like, oh my God, it's Robert Strong. Oh, he took his, oh God, it's Gregor. You
right.
know, it just doesn't work.
Okay, gotcha.
This guy is such a physical specimen. You can't put his bloated purple face
into
a mask and say, oh, he's taking a vow of silence.
And then do a close-up of the eye holes.
Sure.
With his mottled skin. So Littlefinger's probably headed up north, yeah?
There is a hot, speaking of that, there is a hot take. That if you look at the Mountain's mottled eyeball skin that's showing through that, and you cross-reference that with the last known look of Joffrey, it's pretty that there's some suggestion that maybe he fashioned the Mountain, the zombie Mountain, with Joffrey's head.
It would be way too small.
Well, but it's covered with a fucking helmet.
You put a kid's head on a giant's body.
But can you imagine?
It's gonna look like.
The whole point of this is that...
An inverse Mr. Potato Head.
The whole point of this theory is, like, what a fuck it's going to be when he finally... like, let's say he's victorious and he wins his battle that Cersei's going to need him to win.
Right.
Which we don't know, but it'll probably involve some kind of trial with the Septons.
Okay.
Like, imagine he's victorious,
holy
he pulls
shit.
Off, and it's dead Joffrey there. But,
so, okay, does Cersei know about this?
Cersei, no, I wouldn't think so.
Okay, so she'd be just as disgusted. She might have him killed for
That's
that.
That's the thing. I don't think that Qyburn is an idiot, and you
that
have
would
to
be a huge mistake.
You have
for him.
To be a fool, yeah,
yeah.
But it's a cool mental visual to see her like. I know why would
right.
you
now
want
if they
him...
brought back Oberyn,
yeah.
and put you know
sure.
Joffrey's head on his body. I could see it because he's got no head. But like, why bring back the Mountain and put another head on him?
Yeah, no, I don't know. There's a lot of interesting...
but it would be an old switcheroo on the audience.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Yeah. All right, well, I didn't think so either for many of the same reasons, but it's
okay.
Cool. One of those cool theories.
So Littlefinger, what do you think his game plan is? I mean, he clearly wants to become
I don't
gather
know,
power.
Man, he's climbing this ladder of chaos, and
yeah.
how high can he get
before he gets his head
he's already
off.
The Warden of the West.
Yeah.
No, the East or the Vale or
wherever, yeah.
And now he's going to be Warden of the North. If she keeps his word, so that sews
and
up.
And if he can accomplish the mission. I mean, you still got to take out the Boltons, right?
Yeah, but I mean, if he succeeds, and I have no love for the Boltons, I'm kind of pulling for him.
Me too, yeah.
That makes him the Lord Paramount of, like, two major sections. Like, by size, the North is the largest, and the Vale is one of, outside of, like, the, you know... Well, I don't know. It's the richest outside of, like, the Westerlands and the Reach...
Okay.
So it's like your third banana, but
it's,
still,
it's
it ain't
also,
nothing. It's also very hard to invade because of the mountains. So,
well, unless you're White Walkers, which we know winter is coming, and
sure.
the first stop is Winterfell. The first stop is the
sure.
north, right? So,
and there's a question
he
about,
might be directly in the path of that.
There's a question about how far south the winter actually comes.
Okay,
and also
I think this time it might want to come all the way south.
That's the thing is, in like since it's a magic base kind of thing anyway, it could be that yes, on your average winter, it never gets more than
yeah.
a light dusting of snow in King's Landing. Mm-hmm. But when the White Walkers come, it could be full on a fucking ice age.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
We will. Things,
but yeah,
I don't
know
if they're looking
I
great.
Honestly,
for
don't know what little. I mean, you know, that's. I did this thing a couple times last year in a spoiler cast where I'm like, you know, what is Martin playing at? Is Martin telling a conventional fairy tale where the good guys win, or is he telling a grim fairy tale where the bad guys win?
Yeah.
Or if you don't want to call them bad, like an unexplainable, supernatural, otherworldly intelligence versus mankind, and mankind loses. It's a
okay.
essentially a Lovecraft story.
All right. I don't know. I really couldn't tell you.
I don't
it
either.
Seems like, you know, in popular fiction, the humans would win.
Sure.
Like, in every encounter I can think of with aliens, the humans win.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are, I mean, that's the thing. Like, there are, if this is more of a horror Stephen King novel, you can have, there's first of all, there's victories, but at what cost?
Sure.
And there's also, like, sometimes, you know, the forces of humanity lose to the forces of horror.
Right. And in some ways, I think that's a more interesting story.
And also, especially if maybe we've done something to deserve it.
Sure.
Like,
all this infighting. That's the thing that gets me about the current scenario here, the stage that's been set, is there's all this little war is coming at a very bad time for the larger war, which is the war with the undead, the icy north.
Do we have a cause and effect? Is the White Walkers coming? Okay. Are the White Walkers coming, and it's just fortuitous that the entire Seven Kingdoms are embroiled in civil war and have been steadily weakening themselves and burning their crops right before winter instead? Or is all the civil war and infighting and all the corruption and injustice the thing that brought? Are they like some kind of mechanism to restore some sort of balance?
Sure. Or is it, you know, seeing an advantage and exploiting it by the White Walkers?
And if anything, the show is further ahead as far as the White Walker lore and what they're up to than the books in many cases. So that's a very open question. Like, what is Martin playing at? What kind of story is he telling?
Won't know for a few more years.
No.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So let's go to Cersei.
Okay.
Kind of leapfrogging here over to Cersei. She just got out of the jail. She's got the mountain by her side. She's angry. She's been shamed. I feel like there needs to be a rampage. There needs to be...
Oh, I think you're going to get a rampage.
A Cersei, Jaime, mountain rampage next season. This season.
Okay. Why would... So,
Well, Jamie's on his way back, and he's also angry.
And right? He's burying the corpse of their yet another child.
Exactly. The second of three.
And recall that last season, from this prophecy, they actually did another kind of mind-blowing thing, which is they moved the prophecy of Maggie the Frog, the woods witch.
Yep.
Where she says that you're going to have three children with golden hair, and they're all going to bear golden shrouds, mm-hmm. and this is something that's kind of been fracturing the sanity of Cersei for a long time, and now her lover comes back bearing the second corpse.
And she's got one left.
And you saw what kind of maniacal hold she has on Tommen's safety and well-being. What is she going to do now?
Yeah, I think she's going to...
Does she take Jaime back?
You know, the what is it? The more you tighten your grasp, the more slip through your fingers.
The more sun slip through your fingers.
Right. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. She's going to go, oh, God, we've lost two of the three.
Yeah.
I need to keep a tight hold on the third one.
Does she renew a boning program with Jaime? We have to build our ranks back up.
At this point, yes. At this point, go for it.
Well, how mad is she going to be at Jaime? How mad is Jaime going to be at her? Because
she's going to have all the anger.
They've all grown apart, right?
Right.
But on the other hand,
and she was angry that he wasn't doing anything about this, and that's why he promised to go over there and get Marcella and bring her back. Like, he promised to do this thing. He's failed. It cost the life of their kid. She's going to be pissed.
And what is, and that's
in the meantime, he wasn't here to protect her from this. Cardinal, whatever the fuck it's called,
sparrow,
the sparrows. Yes, thank you.
But that's the thing. Like, also, we're leaving out Dorne's agency in this because the prince down there wanted no part, or did he? Of all this,
I don't think
double
so.
Cross. I don't think so either. But yeah,
I think Bashir was totally like hands prince off Bashir. On this thing.
But whether he wanted it or not, he's got it.
Yep,
and that's the thing. Like, before Cersei does anything to Dorne. She's got to wrest control of her city back from the Sparrows.
That's
so I think we're going to definitely see some house clearing.
Yeah, they can't fight on another front, at least not overtly.
I want to see how these fuckers take down the mountain in full plate armor when he's dead already, and he's got a 6-foot sword, and they've got basically hammers.
He's just gonna Zangief. He's just gonna spin around with his sword out.
He's gonna be cracking men's skulls between his thighs like so many walnuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even I can't shoes, wait. Sake. What a fucking rampage. It better be badass.
There's going to be a violent separation of church and state in the season.
I certainly hope so.
But then again, the Sparrows are the people's champion.
That's right. She risked turning the public against
even
her.
More against her, which makes me think, like, I mean, could we see at the end of the season Jaime and Cersei ruling as queen and king regent? I mean, I don't know how this... that's obviously...
How does the bloodline stuff
it doesn't,
work
there? It doesn't. But if everyone is against you already, and they're just like, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to run this shit.
Okay.
And we're going to be just... We're going to be brazen like the kings of old.
If Cersei marries Jaime, does that make him the king? King regent or whatever? King...
Well, I mean, again, the bloodlines don't work out at all.
I know.
Because the only reason, you know...
But marrying... A princess marrying someone else from another kingdom makes her the queen.
But how would she... That's the thing. How would either one Wouldn't of them become king first?
Oh, that's right, because she's not even the queen.
But now what they could do is that she's the queen regent right now, and he could be the king regent.
Sure.
And so they can rule through their immature son.
And I think, you know, there's a scene in the previews where she's talking to what's-his-nuts. What is her other son's name?
Tommen,
telling him he's got to be strong and lead, and so I think that's what's going to happen, right?
But the thing is, she's kind of
it's still going to be this battle between Margaery and Cersei. That's not over yet.
And she did her shame walk. How's Margaery getting out of prison?
Right,
because we know that the Martells are not amused by any of this bullshit happening with their.
But one of them's over in Iron Bank land.
That's Mace. Ineffectual. So that's another interesting ripple. He's having no luck getting money or settling the crown's debts because they're like, hey, we back Stannis and we think he's going to come and fuck you.
But he's not.
But so I wonder if suddenly the Iron Bank is a little bit more receptive to renewing the credit line of the original clientele.
How do they find out about that?
Oh,
When your champion dies.
They're too big to fail. They got spies all over.
I guess so. Yeah,
I mean, they got like tons of money. They share a home office with the Faceless Men. If they want to know, they can find a way to know.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So they may get a little help from there.
Yeah, because like it seems like outside of Dorne, there is a shortage of people who are ready to vie for the throne. I guess Littlefinger, if he ever turns traitor.
Right, right. Dorne seems to be the capital of people with armies now.
Because you had, you know, the original War of Five Kings was Robb Stark, he's dead. The great Balin Greyjoy, who's still fucking around on Greyjoy Island. You had...
Stannis.
Yep, Stannis.
He's dead.
Who's dead? Who else? Oh, his brother, Renly.
Oh, right, right. Who's also dead.
Yeah, so there's no more pretenders left. And in ostensibly, the kingdom should be settling the fuck down, but we know it's not, so...
Right. So, Jaime, you wanted to talk about Jaime.
I think we kind of talked about it, essentially.
He's mad.
What, you know, how's he going to salvage the Dornish situation from Rysella? Because he's still got Prince Bashir, who I think wants peace, but at what price can it be made now?
Uh-huh.
Does Cersei accept him? You know... They really tease the whole Robert the Strong thing hard in a trailer with her choosing violence over peaceful resolution.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Should we go over to Dorne? Should we talk a little bit about...
I don't know what to say about Dorne, because on
well,
the one hand...
Well, Arya, we definitely got to talk about.
Oh, so you're mistaking Dorne for across the Narrow Sea.
Dorne's
down
Dorne
south.
Is that's right. On the same continent.
Yeah, they're in Braavos, kind of Venetian city of Braavos. Do you want? Yeah, we should talk about Arya, because she's getting up. If you want to see Arya's arc, it looks like just watch season one of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Specifically, the origin story with him and Stick, because it seems like she's blind, she's being taught to use her other four senses, she's running rooftop to rooftop with a bunch of wire foo enabled. All that shit looks cool.
Yeah.
All that shit looks really
cool. It's a Rocky IV training montage, you know?
Yeah. And it's another curious hybrid between some parts of her character are seem to be far advanced from what the books are, and there's some, like, some of that rooftop shit is straight out of some of her training montage in the books, so...
Okay.
You know, that's an interesting experience as a fan to be kind of, like... in both spots there.
I have this running theory in my head about Arya, and that she might die. So becoming no one could be, you know, code for drinking from this fountain or whatever, dying,
actually experiencing
being prepped,
a real death,
put into the Hall of Faces, and then just becoming no one in that these people, whoever they are, the Faceless Men, can use her face. And so we might... Like, I'm wondering if we don't lose the character...
Is it like a Borg-like collective? Because we've seen with the wizards over in that one city that I can't remember anymore, the House of the Undying, where Dany went to get her dragons back. Mm-hmm. They had a similar situation where they all had kind of shared the same face, and we got the white situation, where we've already got this thing where... You know, you're kind of undead or undying or in this death-like state. You still have some kind of will and consciousness, but it's being subsumed by some other entity. So it'd be interesting if the Faceless Men were another branch off that same tree.
And that, like, the character of Arya needs to die, whatever that means in this context, become just a face for them to use, and we will still identify with Arya as a character through her face, but not necessarily through that actual literal character.
You know, it's very arguable that that's one of the things I've been fascinated by, the magical system that Martin's put in place, is that it's got many different gods and many different ways. Like, you know, you got the old gods that seem to be, you know, cold and like these nature magic, and then you've got the Lord of Light, who's the seven, which is kind of an inert, almost fictional, mythological gods that people still believe in. And you got the Red Lord, the Lord of Light, who can actually fucking bring people back to fire or back to life and set shit on fire.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that the Faceless Men unify all these in the one true god, Death. And I wonder if in Martin's world, all of these magical systems are connected by this deeper kind of layer. And I don't know if there's an intelligence behind that, if there's an actual god, or if it's just untapped mystical power that could be quantified and scientifically explained if you actually sat down to do it, but no one has.
Like the Force.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That's because that's a lot of part of the world building that I'm excited to see unfold, and we're going to get to it in the show first.
Right, and we have seen other people who have been blind, right? Like the old black man who who walks out in the alley when she's, you know, cut down a bird or whatever.
Yes.
And she's about to get in a fight.
Right.
He walks out and they run away. I think that guy was blind.
Yep.
So it looks like there is like some kind of transitional thing here that she has to undergo, and she just hasn't done it yet. And maybe we'll see that by the end of this season.
Yeah. We have conspicuously refrained from commenting on one particular character, Jon Snow.
Right. Because it's the one that everybody's talking about.
I mean, this is stuff that's being debated, and we're exactly at the point in the books that we are in this TV show where, I mean, exactly. Like, the final scene is essentially where we leave him at the books.
Okay.
We're living in a world where people can be brought back from the dead.
Right.
So much so that you start wondering, you know, what if because we've been used to this world where anyone can die, but that means a lot less if anyone can also come back to life.
Sure.
So on the one hand, Jon Snow seems to be a central character. On the other hand, it would be very Martin-esque if he's just dead.
Yeah.
Like he's not. He was the other shining hope that you put all your marbles behind, and it's going to have to be Sam figuring shit out at Old Town because he's not coming back. I find it hard to believe. And I will say that I think that the marketing people in HBO and affiliated show are geniuses because if he's in the trailers, it's only as a corpse. There's not even a tease. And in the teasers, they show all these dead people, Ned and Robb Stark and Catelyn, and then they show John. It's like, ah, John's dead. But then they pan up, and it's everybody that you know is alive. Tyrion's there, and Jaime's there, and Cersei's there, and Arya's there. So, like, they're really as good a job as you can do in this age of kind of providing that secrecy and keeping the audience guessing. So what does your gut say? Is he dead or is he alive?
My gut says he's coming back.
Okay.
I mean, he's too...
I feel a tone of disappointment as you say
that. Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't particularly like people being resurrected unless you're the Mountain and you're there just to cause havoc and to reap some souls. I don't know. It's fine if he does, I guess. It won't bother me from, like, a storytelling perspective, because it's well within this world to do that. I would be disappointed that they bring back this main character without, you know, any to-do.
The thing about coming back to life in Martin's lore is it's never free.
Yeah, and it's never looks good.
Yeah, like the Whites, obviously, they might have memories. They might actually have their full conscious memory, but they're subsumed by this malevolent, we think, force.
Yeah.
In the case of, like... you know, Beric Dondarrion, the one who was brought back to life by the Thoros of Myr that Arya and the Hound met, he had been resurrected 4, 5, 6 plus times, and every time he came back, he was more of a shadow. Like, he couldn't remember. Like, he remembered he used to live in a castle, but he couldn't remember where it was. He remembered he was betrothed to a woman, but he couldn't tell you what it looked like. He becomes almost this ghost inside the machine.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that you can bring someone back, but maybe they're actually transformed as a character.
Right.
And yeah,
he won't be the same Jon Snow.
Well, and he
can't be, right?
And also, the one thing that Maester Aemon said that they squeezed into the show was that you have to kill the boy so that the man may live.
Right.
And that's kind of an elegant way to take a character who's like this boyish optimistic and turn him into the motherfucker he needs to be to win a war.
Right, get killed extinction. By being naive.
Yeah, that is an interesting way to go about it. Now, like, what do the Black Brothers do? Like, there's a whole lot of questions about, like, this guy just pops off as, like, the other thing that a lot of people have said that's interesting is that, you know, death frees you from your vows to the Night's Watch.
Right.
So if he comes back to life, can he hold lands? Can he father children now?
Can he be king?
Is he going to come back as a white? Is he going to come back as a... because, you know, you had all these apocryphal stories about the Night's King and who his identity is. And he seems to, you know, he had that stare off with Jon. Is he going to, like, kind of be the anti-version of that? Or is he going to be his successor? Is he going to be raised with fire from the Lord of the Light? Just, Is he going to warg into, you use the Stark power of warging to warg in the ghost and kind of chill in the wolf body for a while?
Shoot fire from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse.
Right. Who knows? Is he going to break Zod's neck and turn his back on everything that he stood for? Who knows?
We really don't know, and I don't feel like I can really speculate. It's just kind of up in the air.
Let me ask you this. Gut check. He comes back first episode.
Okay.
No, yes or no.
I mean, oh. Oh, God.
This is such a contrast from The Walking Dead.
No. He doesn't come back first episode.
Okay. First three episodes.
Yes.
I think that's... In fact, if I would lay money, I think the third episode is exactly where he comes back.
Okay.
No special knowledge. I'm just saying that the... I feel like if they address this right away, there's why even have the mystery? Like, that's a genuine cliffhanger that has, and it's not just what happened, but it's what's going to happen next, and to deal with all that.
I almost don't even want to see him rezzed.
Oh, really?
I almost want it to be like, we come back to the North, and, like, Jon Snow is doing his thing. And we're like, what the fuck?
That's a little.
And then
too,
we find out over the course of the episode, like, how it all happened.
I don't know. That feels a little too Tarantino for me. And plus, I want to see someone brought back from the dead, man. I think that's.
You kind of saw the
that's
mountain.
Dramatic.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
We've seen a little bit of people rezzing.
And I don't know about the mountain. I really don't know. Is he like a Gollum type, where he's completely animated by some sorcery that Qyburn's put into him? Is he more of a is he still essentially just a Gregor Clegane who's a Lannister loyalist? Like, what kind of... How much of the mountain is still in that guy?
Good question. I don't know. Can we talk about the Hound briefly? The
sure.
Hound was not in season 5. You seem to have some kind of bug up your ass for thinking the Hound was not dead.
Oh, well, you
back
don't see
in the day. You
don't
see him
his
die.
Body.
You
don't
see him get... practically crippled falling off a thing, and then they just leave him there and he's stabbed and like or no he's not stabbed Arya just leaves him there to die. Coming back? No. Are we ready to say the Hound not coming back? Are you ready? Because I was ready the moment they left him on that bluff.
I might have to wait till Friday.
God damn it.
I have to wait through spoiler cast.
Okay, another person who was not in season 5, Bran Hodor, his buddies up way up in the North, completely absent from season 5. That means, to me, that says that he's going to be a large player in the battle to come.
I do want to talk about, because I famously called the one-eyed raven Saruman the Dingy, because he was such an unimpressive characterization of this
the
ancient
tree, guy.
Tree spirit that's tootling Bran. And I'm happy to note that he's been replaced by Max von Sydow.
Okay.
Sido? I don't know how you pronounce it. He's he's been in a ton of shit.
Yeah.
And he's an oppressive dude, but you've most recently seen him in The Force Awakens as the vaguely Obi-Wan-ish Kenobi character who gives
the
missing piece of the map to Luke Skywalker to Poe Dameron.
Yep.
I don't know why they fucking showed him at all. When they could have shown him in Shrouded in Shadows and preserved the mystery, if they're just going to recast him, that kind
right.
of still drives me crazy. But going away from him for a year, I'm going to expect to come back to Bran. He's going to be taller than Hodor. and he's going to be
carrying Hodor around.
It's going to be this weird Empire Strikes Back thing where Hodor is going to be carrying Bran on his back like Yoda, and then and then Bran is going to have another backpack with the one-eyed raven on his. It's going to be Yoda three times removed.
And the
Infinite
one-eyed
Yoda
raven
backpacks.
Will have the girl in his
yes.
in his bag.
Yes, he will.
All right. He's got to be a big player. Conspicuous absence of that force up at the North,
sure.
Kind of being behind enemy lines in a weird way.
Yeah.
That's got to come into play.
And the trailer's got intriguing because we see Bran walking, or
oh,
at least
right.
standing upright
yeah,
and
we
confronted
do.
By the Night's King, so...
Don't we see him more... No, that's a flashback, the yeah. warning out thing.
But I feel like that is really set your mind on fire. Like, is his training going so well that his power... Is this essentially him going into the dark cave and I'm doing a lot of Star Wars references because
yeah,
that's what
well,
I do.
Sure.
But is this him going into the cave of Dagobah
gaining confidence,
or is this like oh
shitless?
Shit, the Eye of Sauron is upon us now. Like, I hope you're strong enough, kid, because you just fucking kicked a psychic tiger in his ass, and now what? Here's his claws and teeth.
I don't know. It's a bunch of magic up there.
Sure.
Anything could happen. Yeah. He could turn into
the thing is the White Walkers got to know he's there, because they actively tried to prevent him from making it to the tree.
Yeah. So, I mean, news traveled back to their leaders, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, they might instantly travel. I don't know.
There's some kind of power in the cave and with that child of the forest that keeps them at bay. But no, I'm really curious to find out more about this One-Eyed Crow character and Bran's training and, you know, skipping him all last year. I feel like we're going to get heavy doses of him in the first few episodes.
Okay.
To just kind of reintroduce it and get that plot line picked back up and dusted off.
Sounds good.
Anything else you want to talk about, or should we get the feedback?
No, I'm not quite sure where they're going to go with Grey Worm and Missandei this year. It seems like, you know, they developed a relationship over the course of last year, and I don't know where that's going. One of them must die, of course. Probably the man, because, you know, Valar Morghulis.
I think man is in the mankind sense of the word, you sexist pig.
So I don't know where that relationship is going, but I'm not that interested, frankly. It always felt a little weird to me.
You know what? I actually was interested, and
really?
Yet they refused to do what I would consider anything interesting with it all last season. So I'm like, it is kind of interesting to take a very small piece. Like, there's like a 2 or 3 sentence throw-off line in the books about these, Unsullied forming some kind of human relationship with women from a comfort, like almost a mother level.
Yeah.
And they, I thought it was an interesting idea to take that and actually personalize it in the form of Grey Worm and Missandei.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I'm that concept is not interesting enough to carry whatever they're doing. And maybe it's the character, the actors, actresses, they're just not magnetic enough.
Maybe
to sell what kind of relationship this is.
But I mean, that's the character of Grey Worm, right? Like, he's not gonna be magnetic. He's had all of his emotions and humanity beaten out of him.
Yeah, but like, you know, that I think that doesn't do justice to work like Leonard Nimoy does, bringing like essentially the same
half
character human Spock.
Head, sure.
He has been emotionally neutered
by
his training and his culture. Data from Star Trek as another, you know, like all
that's fair.
You know, the emergency medical hologram. Like, there's Star Trek's loaded with these, and it takes a certain type of character charisma to play a character with no emotion or alien type emotions or things that you can't relate to, as far as like, you know, something basic as far as how you feel about sexual attraction and emotional intimacy, and present that in an interesting way. And this guy, don't know if he's got it.
Okay, we'll see.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
The other thing is, this is likely going to be a season of dragons. I mean, we saw when Tyrion met up with Dany last season.
Sure.
He was like, look, you're not the mother of the Unsullied. You're the mother of dragons. Let's fucking do this thing.
And we see
Drogon flying over what I think are the corpses of a million Dothraki raiders. I think.
Are like, they corpses?
And that's they look like corpses to me. The great thing about being the mother of dragons.
Uh-huh.
Is that dragon's fire won't hurt you. And so, like, you can stand in a crowd of 100 people, Drogon can breathe fire down on her, and she'll be just fine. Whereas everyone around her will be dead. Like, she's immune to the weapon, right?
Yeah, that's debatable.
It's like, really?
I can't really defend it. Maybe we can. That's something to talk more about on Friday, but...
But
that
that's
is
like
certainly
being...
something that's that you could debate whether that she has true immunity to fire or if there are some special circumstances to that.
I'm going on the immunity to fire angle. I always have.
Sure, if she's got an asbestos birthday suit, then
right.
Being
that's
a
like
dragon...
being immune to a nuclear bomb, like radiation and an explosion, and just using that as your weapon.
You know what? I'm just going to have a sword, and I'm going to wear armor, and I just want the dragons to breathe fire as a carpet in front of me, and I'm just going to march right into the King's Landing, and I'm going to sit on the throne. It's already melted.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to have the dragons blast me with fire 24/7.
Right.
And who's going to touch? Who's going to stop me? Who's going to touch me?
Nobody. So I don't know. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a cool. It has a lot of potential.
Sure.
Especially with. Whatever this Dothraki scene with Drogon flying over it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we've gotten a pretty good recap of where we're at and where we're going. Do you want to get into feedback, or do you have a couple last-minute thoughts?
No, I'm ready for feedback.
Today's sponsor is Casper. They're the purveyor of superior online mattresses. As a special offer, you can go to casper.com/GOT and get $50 off your first order, and you're going to want to take advantage of this after I tell you about this mattress. Now, they shipped one out to me the beginning of last year, and I'm on, you know, going on a year and a half on my Casper experience, and it's still going strong. It's by far my favorite mattress I ever had. And here's the thing. Like, I bought several mattresses before. The mattress that this replaced was only about 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's king size. Man, try to get one of those mattresses home without paying shipping charges or, you know, just hauling it up the stairs. This king size mattress... came in a tightly packed box. It was about 3 foot. It's about the size of Lord Tyrion. It's 3 foot by 2 foot by two foot. You slice that. They give you a tool that allows you to slice it open without harming the mattress, and it just expands. And you know, it takes a bit to expand. You flop it up on whatever you had your bed before, and it's an instant upgrade. It's got just the right sink, just the right bounce, because they use two technologies. It's not just memory foam. It's a hybrid of latex and memory foam, which I find... I found some of the other competing memory foam mattresses a little bit unforgiving.
Mm-hmm.
But this, man, I think it's the perfect mattress for me.
Hasn't gone lumpy on you?
Hasn't gotten lumpy. I just took all the sheets and stuff off of it to give it kind of an honest appraisal. It looks exactly like the day I first got it out of the box.
Okay.
And it has got also a risk-free trial and return policy.
This is what I like,
And, you know, I actually got word from a Bald Move fan. I've got a lot of unsolicited feedback from people that have used this our deal. You can go to casper.com/GOT to get a special offer, $50 off your mattress purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I got a lot of positive. One person that said, you know, it wasn't quite for them. And they were skeptical of how easy it would be to return. But not only did they call, and Casper worked with them for back and forth a couple times with different toppers and different arrangements to try to get it to custom fit their sleeping needs.
Uh-huh.
But as is their word, within 100 days, you call them and say you want out of your house, full refund, and they will either donate the mattress or have it recycled. And they just pick it up, and they said it's all exactly as we said in the ad. So it's nice to hear... even a negative experience, if you didn't like the product, it's risk-free.
Yeah.
find any other mattress place, go up to a mattress store, say, I want to take this mattress home and sleep on it for 99 nights and then chuck it back at you if you don't like it. It's not going to happen.
That's the thing. I mean, it's kind of essential with an online mattress. You need a trial period.
Yeah.
But like in a store, you only get like a 10-minute trial period.
And you don't have sheets on it.
Right.
It's not in your environment. Uh-huh. Like it's
Here, you can take it home. You can test it. And if you don't like it, within over 3 months.
Yes.
That's a long time to test
a mattress. Definitely enough to get an idea of whether it's for you or not.
Absolutely.
So it's like, why not try this first if you're in a, if you're in the market for a new mattress? The prices are great.
Mm-hmm.
Starting at $500 for a twin size, all the way up to $950 for a king size. By the way, it's only $900 if you use Casper.com/GOT.
Mm-hmm.
Ship it to your door. It makes transportation a breeze. I cannot recommend these mattresses enough. If you're in the market for one, check it out. They're made in America.
Boom.
You know, we're making mattresses great here again. One more time, go to Casper.com/GOT and use the promo code GOT during checkout to get $50 towards a mattress purchase. Terms and conditions apply. Hey, before we move on to feedback, we've been through our first year of Club Bald Move. It's going strong. It's still just $1 a month if you buy the year subscription or $2 a month if you go month to month. Club Bald Move at club.baldmove.com. And we got something cool coming out. It's the last episode of the House Forester, No Rules, Just Right playthrough of Telltale's Game of Thrones video game.
Yeah, I don't know if we advertised this very heavily last season.
We did it a bit, but we just didn't do internal advertising very well last season. But if you want to get an idea of what this is like, you can go to our YouTube page at youtube.com/baldmove, and we've got two whole seasons of The Walking Dead Telltale in the free section.
Yeah.
You can get an idea of like kind of what we get up to and our sense of humor about it. But we essentially try to take the path less taken. Like, most people go with the heroic or the courageous or the non-asshole skill tree, and we pride ourselves on the lowest amount of percentage points for the players to select the options that we do. Sometimes we screw up and you just gotta kill a Bolton or something like that, but mostly we stay true to the course. And the good times had by all. And it's a great way to support independent podcasting, because the only way we can do the extent of coverage we can of Game of Thrones, not to mention all the other stuff we get up to, is by being full-time independent podcasters. And you can help out and get a bunch of free content and ad-free feeds. You never have to listen to a pitch like this again just by going to club.baldmove.com and perusing your sign-up options. Club.baldmove.com. Feedback, as always, gameofthrones@baldmove.com. And forums.baldmove.com. There'll be a spoiler thread and a non-spoiler thread for each episode going up on Saturday night for us to discuss. Starting things off with Chelsea from New Orleans, who we're going to revisit in the spoiler section because she's got some thoughts, but I wanted to get a non-spoiler while you're still unsullied.
Yep.
Her main thrust of her question was, are there any characters you've become very attached to where you would be devastated if they died?
Tyrion across the board. I mean, Tyrion's the best character in Game of Thrones, period.
Tyrion, it's hard, to the extent that it's almost like, I understand that eventually Marvel's going to have to say goodbye to the Robert Downey Jr.
Uh-huh.
as Iron Man and Tony Stark.
Yeah.
But it's hard to imagine, because so much of what's funny and interesting and cool about that is that character.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones the same way. Like, you take Tyrion out of the equation, I think A number one, and this show is half as colorful and interesting, and Peter Dinklage is a fucking boss, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Did you see a Saturday Night Live performance?
Was it the Afraid and Naked?
Yes.
Naked and Afraid.
That was one of them.
I did see that, yeah.
He had a lot of mixed reviews, but I will say that he was fearless. Like, he did
Well, he played the straight man in a lot of that stuff, so like...
But he also did his space pants. Did you see his space pants?
No. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It was him as a dwarf musician who was wearing, like, tight pants that had the cosmos on it.
Oh,
and he was singing
like
a song
David
about
Bowie style,
yeah,
labyrinth
or think maybe even more German, like German pop synth, like that's kind of band.
Oh no, I mean Labyrinth David Bowie wearing the cosmos pants.
Yeah, yeah. And he's saying he's just singing about his space pants in the middle of a mafia hit going down.
Okay.
And I'm like, man, I don't care if the rest of the episode sucks. That is so sublime. I love it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. He was just up for anything. You throw him in with Leslie Jones, this 6'6", terrifying black woman, and he's Naked and Afraid Celebrity Edition.
Uh-huh.
That shit worked.
Yeah, he's a beast. I mean, station agent. He's so good.
That's the thing. We saw Station Agent since the last filming. Someone commissioned it as a result of us being enthused. And he is. Like, you should. That's on Netflix for free right now. Go watch The Station Agent if you like Peter Dinklage, because it is amazing.
Yeah.
It's a very quiet, like, it's got Bobby Cannavale and, or Cannavale, God damn it.
Carnival.
Whatever his fucking
Bobby Carnival name
is.
Hey, I'm Bobby Carnival.
yeah. So, tune. What was that? The Bad Fortuna? Bone Fortuna?
Bone Fortuna? I don't know.
Yeah, that's, I'm mixing my Boardwalk Empire into my Game of Thrones, and it's like tuna and peanut butter. It's not too great. tastes great together. Anyway, Station Age. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tyrion. I'll pitch the question to myself. Arya. Arya dying would feel like everything about the Starks was worthless. Like, everything that was good. She's at this point a twisted version of Ed's nobility. But if she dies, like, Sansa, I've never really, like, if she dies so that Sansa can become the badass Stark that rights everything wrong, or, like, maybe Sansa dies and it's just poor little Rickon as this 9-year-old boy king, I don't like that at all.
Bran's still in the mix.
Yeah, Bran is becoming, he's like Dr. Manhattan, though. You know what I'm saying?
And that he's all powerful?
Like, no, and that these strange abilities are, it's making him harder and harder to relate to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's becoming more and more detached. They had dialogue in season 4 about, you know, the longer you spend in your wolf, the more, you know, kind of weak you get and the less relatable, and we need him to be our hero, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, Arya, of all the Starks, like even Jon, Arya is the one that I'm particularly attached to.
Now, they've done such a good job with developing all of these characters, really, that I think they could lose Tyrion, and I wouldn't be like, you know what, fuck this show or anything.
No.
I would be bummed out, but I would still be gung-ho about the show. So, like, there's no one character that would just make me throw my hands up and say, fuck it,
yeah,
I'm done.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, but those are the ones that would really get me.
They would suck,
Some combination of Brienne and Jaime would really bum me out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Like, you kill Jaime off, I don't know. Brienne, I'm not sure where she fits in, like, story-wise.
One of them has
to
survive to the end, because they have some kind of story that they're telling together.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to place my bet, I'd say Jaime dies and Brienne survives somehow.
Right.
I don't know. That's I'm trying to think if, like, because Varys, I like Varys, and I like Littlefinger, but if they died, it'd be like, yeah, that's about right.
Uh-huh.
That's about right. Dany would confuse me, because it seems like she's being built up to be the fire to Jon Snow's ice.
Right.
Like, that's the, you know,
I mean, what fucking
fairly
hope?
Popular theory, if you've been following the Song of Ice and Fire thus far, is it'd be like, oh, here's the ice guy and here's the young, fire attractive queen. Fire queen, and they're gonna fucking make...
Right, that's a pretty easy thing to jump to. But, like, also, she seems to be one of the few weapons that this land even has against the walkers now.
Sure.
Like, all of the armies have been decimated,
well, you saw
if
what,
not worse.
You see what dragon glass and dragon steel does. You imagine what a fucking dragon...
Exactly.
Like, it's just going to be
and
dry grass,
you
know, with
ice and fire. Well, yes. Guess what? Ice doesn't win that battle.
No, it doesn't.
So, you got to see her lasting, or at least the dragons being used by someone.
Yeah.
Like, could Tyrion become... I've always said I want to see Tyrion riding a fucking dragon into King's Landing.
We see in the
I'm back,
trailer,
bitches. Taste this, Cersei.
Sure, sure. We see if your cheekbones can save you now. We see him go down into the crypts. Now, it could be some, like, you know, marketing trick-cutting fuckery, but it does look like he's going down to test some theories on dragon rearing.
Right.
That he has, which is exciting.
And they breathe fire at the camera.
Yeah.
Do they breathe fire at Tyrion?
I don't know.
Do they consume him?
Because that could also be a clever reuse of some scenes from last season where guys did get caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
When she sacrificed some of the wise old masters, or whatever the fuck they're called, the ruling elite.
Yeah.
I think the situation of Meereen is just kind of fascinating anyway.
Yeah, it's gotten so fucked up. I'm interested to see how Tyrion's going to try and
write
it.
It's a super hyper version of the French Revolution.
Okay.
Except for someone on high said, nah, you can't do what you want to do, which is line everybody up and guillotine them.
Right.
You got to play nice. Like, it's that kind of simmering powder keg. And now...
Who's Maquis de Sade?
Yeah.
Maquis de Sade? I don't know.
I think
the Maquis is...
Tyrion is the sadiest of them all.
Okay, yeah. I think so. He's in the brothels more often than not.
Sure, sure. Actually, Joffrey.
Well, he's done. He's gone.
He's finished. There are no more... Marquis de Sade's in this thing. Okay. So that's. Is there any other character?
It might turn out to be Sam. Sam might be the Marquis de Sade, being a writer, being a scholar and all.
Sure. And he's, you know, writing his amateur.
Yeah.
Pornography involving his fat.
And now he's gotten a taste of the sweet life.
Sure.
Maybe he can't get enough.
Got the taste of the gillyfish.
Maybe it twists him.
That's another one. Honestly, Sam would be. Pretty big blow. I've become attached to that little round guy.
How would Sam die? I mean, he's on his way to the Citadel.
So once many he gets ways to die in this. Are you trying to get him killed?
No, but once you get to the Citadel, like, he doesn't have enemies at the Citadel, right? But he might make them. I mean, you know, they don't want him to be around Gilly either. It's not like Jon Snow makes that point last season. So
yeah.
I don't know if Sam is safe, but he's certainly safer.
Well, he's got it. Anytime a character has an active mission that doesn't seem to be like beat the Lannisters or win the war,
right?
They're probably not going to meet an end until they get along that mission.
Sure.
Although if Sam dies, it's going to be he cracks a book. He's like, I've discovered it, the secret to Dragonsteel, and he turns around. I know, and then a crossbow goes through his heart.
Yeah, and it's Ollie, son of a bitch.
Yeah, and you know, it's Jack and Hagar, and he rips off his mask, and it's Ollie.
Yeah.
Or Arya. Michael V says, was wanting to know what you all thought about Game of Thrones joining the series of shows that have post-show recaps, though they're not airing until the next day each episode airs. And I should say that this is official because there's like a hojillion unofficial post-show recaps such as ours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But this is official. The part that's really surprising to me is that the guys from The Ringer, who are formerly from Grantland, namely Bill Simmons, Andy Greenwald, and Chris Ryan, are hosting a show... and want to hear our thoughts on it.
That does not surprise me at all. Like, that seems a natural pairing after they, you know, after Bill Simmons left Grantland.
This is one of the reasons HBO brought him on board.
Right, to develop this kind of content. And it's a perfect fit, in my opinion. Now, yes. I don't want them to do it like Talking Dead or like
I'm going to be watching this very, very interested because if HBO gives them the creative freedom to criticize, and obviously this is a great show.
It's harder to criticize.
You can have spirited criticism that doesn't come off like this is just bullshit project. And
right.
also,
right.
some criticism is the authors and the producers leading you into a trap.
Sure.
Like, oh, it's like the prestige. You've got your eye on this thing that you're getting outraged about, and they're going to sucker punch you from over here.
Right.
And that's part of the authentic fan experience. And if they can have the freedom, if HBO has the confidence that, hey, we've got a good show, it will survive criticism even from within, and that will actually impress and engage the fan base. That will be interesting, and I think that will be very influential because more and more people, this is, you know, if you hire... essentially a professional podcaster to do these post-show recaps in a way that is intellectually honest. I mean, that is, I've always said that this television criticism is going to go the way the ESPN did 20 years ago, where there's going to be so much good TV, you can't keep up with all of it. There's going to be the equivalent of a sports center where you round it up and you have two talking heads debating it. Mm-hmm. Like, why won't that work?
It's getting there.
People are at least as passionate about their favorite entertainment as they are about their sports. And so far, most entertainment is being covered by like the likes of TMZ. And it's all this...
Sure, yeah.
It's
sensationalist
either,
and paid for, bought and paid for.
Yeah. And I feel like there's room for to treat it like, you know, like it's a serious subject that people are passionate about instead of like, you know, a gossipy kind of bullshit thing.
Right. Now, the thing that Michael points out that is scary is this is official. And,
yes.
And you hinted on that. You touched on it. If they don't have the freedom to criticize, the freedom to really speak their minds, this is going to be the same bullshit as Talking Dead, where it's useless to watch. The only reason you're watching it is to find out Easter eggs and like hear the anecdotes about filming and what's it like on the set with Tyrion Lannister.
Right.
With
Peter Dinklage is funny and a genuine
person. Is he really as hung as the fiction makes him out to be? That sort of shit, which is interesting, but it's not it's not what I'm there for.
Yes.
I'm there to discuss the themes of the show, discuss the art of the show.
Yes.
And if, you know, if they can do that, I think it could be great.
Yeah, I think so too. And the thing is like, it's the reason the things went south with Bill Simmons and ESPN is because they wanted to control what said, even when his thing was unpopular and against the company's best fiduciary interest, right?
Yeah.
And it would be shocking to me that he would ink a long-term deal with anyone without getting that spelled out.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's that.
And the thing is, here's the thing, HBO I think is smart enough, because let's say if your hosts that you consider smart and articulate and you've hired to cover this thing have a problem with something, it's a good chance a vast majority of the fan base will have that. And by being able to debate it openly, it actually makes it more engaging and kind of gives a safety valve for some of that discontent. Uh-huh. And also, if you got a really shitty show, there's the hate watch phenomenon. Like, you could actually, like, yeah, we admit it sucks. We're not going to renew it. Have fun tearing it apart on the way out. I don't know if they have that much confidence, but it'd be totally cool if they did. Like, okay, we made a turd. Now I don't know how...
HBO so rarely makes turds.
I know it, but like, let's say that they're doing an after show about The Brink. The Brink was a mess.
Okay, yeah.
And can Bill Simmons and his band do that without pissing off the Tim Robbins and all the executive producers, Jack Blacks? Like, that's not something Hollywood does. Maybe the reason we have this Hollywood experience is because, you know, if you're an insider and you say something bad, you become an outsider, and then you don't get the stuff.
Oh, absolutely it is. I mean, that's the case in,
you
know, the vast majority of human endeavors.
But I think that's where you have, if you're Bill Simmons, you have to have confidence in your people that, like, our original opinions are what people are coming for, not the puff pieces we can do on Peter Dinklage and, you know, Maisie Williams and the Double Ds.
Yeah, and I don't know. At the same time, I'm optimistic and scared because, like you said, it's very focused on the relationships here. And in Hollywood, that matters a lot. And if I know that HBO tends to take a long-term view on things, like, look, we're going to make the show we're going to make, and people are going to come later because we have this great content catalog.
We're literally taste catalog. This isn't content. TV, it's HBO, bitches.
Right. So... in one way, that's good in that they might be able to see that the community wants this thing, but it will be at odds at times with what their partners want, with what the people creating this stuff want. And ultimately, they need those people. They need everybody here, right? They can't really afford to piss off the content creators. They can't afford to piss off the fans too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tightrope. And that's why a lot of the times this official marker is a bad thing. I don't know that it has to be. I just think that it can be a sort of death knell for the thing.
Agreed. But I'm interested in following, because I'm a fan of Bill Simmons and Andy Greenwell.
I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be watching it and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if nothing else, I know Bill Simmons has a TV show coming out later in the year, and this will probably be a preview, kind of like, I imagine, the look and feel. Like, what is a Bill Simmons production? I saw his Grantlands podcast studio. It was kind of awesome.
He should do a show called, Baseball Card Men? He should, like take a page out of low Kevin
stakes,
Smith's book.
Yeah, just a low stakes thing.
Like, he goes around to baseball card shops.
He absolutely could do that. He used to do an annual report of the Sports Collectors Memorabilia Show.
Oh, really?
It has, like, this big thing where, and he would always just show and, like, take funny pictures of all the weird characters that show up at that shit.
Right.
Brett F. wants to talk about Littlefinger. I was wondering about your predictions for Same. In the previews, we see him in the snow looking around, but no one else is seen around him. He's undoubtedly going to be involved in several major plots, as he is linked to several major houses of Westeros. One, he aided the Boltons by delivering Sansa. But he was secretly betting on Stannis to put Roose's head on a spike and then join Sansa as she's named Wardeness of the North. Two, he told Cersei... Well,
was that his game?
Well, two,
okay.
He told Cersei that he'd deliver her Stannis' head in return for being named Warden of the North.
Uh-huh.
He likely did not mean what he said. He merely knew that this was his only bargaining chip to make it out of King's Landing. Cersei's not to be crossed, however foolish she is. Three, he promised Lady Olenna a young boy. Could we be talking about Robin of the Vale marrying Margaery? Should Cersei ruin King's Landing and the Lannister Tommens get ousted? I would love to see the scene where Margaery makes a go of Robin.
Oh, God.
Because, like,
I don't know how that would go down. Like,
I know. He's such a disaster. Like, Tommen, he's 14.
He's horny.
She's
gorgeous.
He's the default setting for 14-year-old. You can work with that.
Yeah.
This guy who's, like, has seizure tantrums and was just wanting to suck on his mom's titty, and now he's been slapped. God knows what Littlefinger's been doing with him since he tossed her out the window.
He's been getting hit with swords for weeks.
Yes, last we left him, he was just getting bullied.
Yep.
That's either going to toughen him up or kill him. I don't know. Four, he has the army of the Vale at full strength and ready for winter. That's the key point. Any chance he joins up with Jon Stark, Sansa, Rickon, and rallies the North against the Boltons? I mean, if what's left of the Lannister and the royal army goes after Dorne, then literally he'll have the only army and the only realm that's been unspoiled by war.
On the continent, yeah.
And that, I mean, does he have designs for the throne?
He totally could. And, you know, getting Sansa in a position that he can use and getting her on his side in some ways. I know he's playing a risky game there. I'm not sure what his goal is exactly with Sansa, but he has some kind of relationship with Sansa. Maybe, you know, she comes in as part of that,
mm-hmm.
as a piece of the puzzle for the North. And he does. He joins up with the Starks and marches on King's Landing eventually.
But his point is, he just talked about a bunch of important people. And his point is, if you keep burning all these important people, how long does it take to run out of goodwill? Who keeps trusting this guy? One of these rungs on the ladder of chaos has to break, and he can't keep all of his options this open. And I feel like all of his bets, like he's essentially covered himself. If two of them fail, then he's got the other two. Like, it seems like there's no way that all of them can fail simultaneously, because if all of them fail simultaneously, he's always got him and the veil that he can do with what as he pleases.
Right. The one thing that could bring it all crashing down is if somebody just gets a wild hair and says, "I've had enough of you, Littlefinger."
Sure.
And kills him. Like Cersei.
Or
Sansa, right.
Or Theon.
Sure. Any of those people could be like, "Look, I don't really have a reason for this, but you've pissed me off and now you're dead."
Sure. Yeah. It's, you know, I might not be killing you for the right reasons, but I know you deserve death.
Uh-huh.
You've done some shit that's worthy of death, and how many thousands and hundreds of thousands of people are dead because of your fuckery.
Yeah.
So I'm pulling your number.
I thought, honestly, that was what was going to happen when he went back to King's Landing and met with Cersei.
Bloody. Cersei, that's the thing. Cersei's not so bright.
Yeah,
She thinks she is. Mm-hmm. And maybe
Tyrion.
With a different upbringing and more experience, she could be.
Yeah.
But she's not. And her opinion of herself vastly outstrips her perceived capabilities are way shorter than her actual capabilities.
Right, whereas Tyrion's the opposite.
And Tyrion was so good at laying that out. Like, you think you're so fucking smart, and that's the thing that drives him crazy. You think you're so smart, but you're so dumb.
Yeah.
You just gave the kingdom over to religious fanatics. If you'd read a history book, I could actually show you. I could show you the chapter in history book where this was done, and these very fuckers are put in power, and this many people died. You're insane.
Yep.
But she's, too busy being pretty. She didn't have to read books.
Thought she could control them.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, Jamie's the same kind of dumb.
That's right.
Don't kid yourself.
No, neither of them are masterminds. It was their father who was the real
brain. Because he did pay attention to history.
Yeah.
And whatnot. So I don't know. It's interesting. We have a ton more to talk about in the spoilers, but I think that's where we're going to leave it for the regular folk.
Yep. And Friday for the spoilers.
Yep.
Not after the music like we would on other shows.
This is going to be a pardon the pun, Stark ending to the podcast.
Right.
We'll have the spoiler edition out Friday. Can't wait. Sunday night we'll have, don't forget, we're doing the instant takes tonight, so
that's right,
we are going to sit down to record them immediately after the episode. We usually talk for 15-20 minutes, and we'll be out 30 minutes after the episode. You'll have our instant take, which is our off the cuff, not well thought out, not researched, unvarnished opinion. Every Tuesday we'll have the fully produced podcast with lots of feedback and covering all the angles, and then Friday will be the spoiler section, and I'm excited.
Me too.
A lot of work, but I don't have the monster of Mad Men on my back at the same time. So
yeah, no, this is kind of the event of the year for me anyway.
Yes.
Now that, you know, some of my favorite shows have ended. Breaking Bad used to be it. Now it's
and that's
Game
the
of
thing.
Thrones.
Like, I feel like Game of Thrones has taken a step back or two in the last year because in the same way that some of the later books are perceived as weaker. They're the connective tissue from the thrilling prologue and introduction where all these characters are introduced and then rapidly killed. And then what's sure to be an amazing finale, you know, it's the middle. Not everything can be Empire Strikes Back. Like, it's rare that the middle part of the story is the most interesting.
Right.
It's getting your characters to where they need to be and go for the climax. Mm-hmm. We're rounding into the climax. Whatever rough road needed to be regraded and repaved, I think they've done. I actually think this is going to be a big year for Game of Thrones to be back.
I think so.
And they'll also be freed from the prejudices largely of the book readers. Well, I don't know.
But it will be contentious. That will
because
be...
Stannis fucking burns his daughter and people lost their goddamn minds. So I wonder how much the fan base is going to be in denial, at least the book readers, like every single time that... Yeah. Someone acts in a way that's not perceived to be in their character. Is it going to be, oh, the Double D's are fucking us? Or is it going to be, no, they've actually just read further than you?
Right. I think the focus is going to shift from, like, oh, Littlefinger doesn't deliver this exact line of dialogue the way he did in the books, to more like, oh, well, I don't think a character would act like this. It's going to be a little more... They're going to be trying to defend their love of the books, but see, and it's going to be ugly.
The expectations always fuck with you. Not having expectations is always better. So, like, when he says...
It
you
is,
know,
but if you're super loyal to a thing that you feel shorted on...
Or if you feel a particular line of dialogue was just perfect, and you've always wanted to see it in the book, and then they change the grammatical structure...
Fine.
I mean, but that's a subjective thing.
I don't care, but
like, oh, well, that's a less artful way to state it, and why did they change it? You can have that. Okay. That discussion will no longer be possible to be had. It's like, was it good?
No, I feel like there's going to be a reflexive action against this season by the book readers, is what I'm saying.
I wonder. It depends on how good it is.
I don't know. I've been reading the internet for a while now, and I feel like
well,
I have a good
what
handle
I'm saying,
on.
Are you going to have a vocal minority, or are you going to have like?
Oh yeah.
But are you going to have like total widespread like what we saw going on in the Walking Dead subreddit after the season 6 finale? Are you going to have that kind of rioting?
Well, I think the vocal minority in a large way shapes the conversation. So like. Mm. I'm worried that the conversation is going to be pushed in a direction that's negative by the people who are just angry that they don't have their book yet.
Well, it's interesting because you got the r/Game of Thrones subreddit that's show watcher first, and you've got the r/ASOAAF, whatever the abbreviation for A Song of Ice and Fire. Uh-huh. And I could see there being a sharp split in those demographics.
Yeah.
Like Game of Thrones maybe is so. Like, right on, it's we're loving it, and the Song of Ice and Fire is like, bullshit, we hate it. And it's also going to be interesting to see how the podcasters roll with it, too. Because, you know, we ain't the only shop with their shingle out selling Game of Thrones wares.
Fuck no.
And there's some that do it, some areas better, some do it, some areas worse. But everyone has this kind of, like, spoiler, non-spoiler, their own way to handle this. And it's going to be super interesting to see how the big, well-established podcast kind of roll with this.
Yep. Should be an interesting season.
Yes.
So we'll see you guys on Friday for
Game Spoiler Cast.
If
you want some spoiler takes, I got a ton of them already, but Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. Get on the forums, forums.baldmove.com, and we'll see you Friday.
See you then.
Bye.